Hello and welcome to Connecting to Host, the co-op and multiplayer gaming podcast. Today we're going to be looking at Elite Dangerous, where you take control of your own starship in a cutthroat galaxy. Elite Dangerous brings gaming's original open world adventure from the 80s into the modern generation with a connected galaxy, evolving narrative, and the entirety of the Milky Way recreated at its full galactic proportions. So, Elite Dangerous is pretty much price consistent everywhere. It's around £20 on PC, and you'll want to pay another £20 on top of that for the Horizons Pass, which we'll discuss in a little bit. Similar pricing on Xbox One and PlayStation 4, depending on if you buy the standalone version or the legendary version, which includes that Horizons Pass. We always like to talk about what we've been playing our games on and what characters we've been using, if applicable. I first played this actually on the Xbox One. It was just a free beta. I think it was the first time they'd done like the beta demo system, or open access. I can't remember what they fucking call it. But
yeah,
it was downloaded
early access thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the first game that they did on it, and I was like, oh, okay, I've done it, give it a look. And I fell in love with it so quickly to the point that my wife had like a full argument with me because she's like, I don't want to sit and watch you play this game, it's boring. And I was like, I really like it. But I've also played it on my 5K iMac, but now I play it on my gaming PC with a GTX 1080 and ultra-wide display. What about you, John?
Yeah, so I've just been playing it on my equally specced PC, but I also have the nice twist of having an HTC Vive, which I spent 2 or 3 hours in Elite Dangerous with, so that's interesting, and we'll talk about it later.
Yeah, it's nice. We're both using joysticks and throttles, which also make it much more immersive and easier to control, although it is a bit fiddly with all the different buttons, a bit of a learning curve there. I'm just going to do a little caveat before we start this podcast, which is just to say that this is a absolutely vast game. And despite having 100 hours of combined play between us, I think we've only scratched the surface of what's actually there. With all that said, though, John, tell us all about it.
Sure, I'll take it away. So at its heart, Elite Dangerous is a space simulation sandbox, and you can essentially fly around and do anything you want, within the confines of your spaceship. So that might be some trading of goods between different systems, smuggling secret goods, trying to get it passed into the stations, or being a pirate or a bounty hunter. And there's over 400 billion star systems for you to visit, rendered at one-to-one with a full galactic and technological simulation based on realistic scientific principles. It's a big-ass world, and you can travel to basically anywhere you like. There's probably places that only one player has ever been.
Well, there are places that no one's been to. I think it's something, I'm going to get the statistic wrong, but my understanding is that something like only 5% of the star systems have actually been visited yet. Like some of them literally will take like 10, 15 years for someone to get there because it's so far away because it's realistic.
Yeah, so, yeah. No, it's crazy. Insanely big world. Absolutely. And it's cool crazy to be a part of it. So
it's really hard to get your head around how big it actually is. Like, you see the planets and you think, they look tiny. And then you get closer and closer and closer to it. And then you realise, fucking hell, it's huge. And then it's like the amount of time to get to the other side of the planet, and it'll like show you on the thing, and it's like 23 days. And it's like,
yeah,
that's
fortunately,
actual
the fast
real time
way of traveling.
Well, yeah.
But otherwise, you would never get anywhere. But no, so apparently, there is a story woven throughout the game. It's hard to find sometimes with all the missions that are generated, but there's also a power play mode where you can sign up to a faction, and the missions that you complete help you gain favor with those factions and let them gain control over various aspects of the galaxy. There's also community challenges which kick in, where you might be asked to bring bounty vouchers back to a specific system for a bigger reward, or trade a certain amount of goods. So these are ones that you can complete, and the more people in the community that participate, the bigger the rewards get. You got some horrifically large amount of credits for taking part in this, right?
Yeah, I got like 19 million credits for just shooting a few ships and returning them back to a thing. Like, yeah, it was pretty good.
This is clearly a hook to try and make you come back and play it if you haven't.
It worked.
Signed in for a while. So, but for the most part, you're going to be on your own, flying around in your initially tiny little ship, gradually earning money through legal or illegal activities. And I guess you can kind of think of it a little bit as a truck simulator in space. Very chill experience. I mean, flying from one system to another, it's a very almost zen-like experience as you just engage, gauge your drives, get going. A little bit of tension, just in case you get pulled out of hyperspace by some pirates, but it doesn't happen that often, so you can kind of sit back and just enjoy the ride, watch space go by, and then bring yourself to a slowdown as you approach the planet you want to slow down to. But then it was, I guess, about a year and a half after release, or 9 months ago or something, and they brought out the Horizons Expansion Pass, which adds a whole bunch of new upgrades. And I guess the biggest feature, at least the one that we were most excited for at the time, was the ability to land on planets. So you can land on, I guess, certain types of planets, not all of them, because it wouldn't make sense to land on a gas giant.
There are certain ones, and they have, like, in space, like, most star systems have a few space stations in them, like, orbiting around, so you get, like, orbitals, which, like, just these little rinky-dink docks that you just land on. And then there are some where they're, like, these huge fucking spaceports where they've got, like, an envelope in the front of it, and you have to, like, fly in, and there's, like, 50 pads in there to land on.
Yeah.
There's loads of people and shit going on. The planets similarly have little spaceports that you can land on and stuff like that. It's really nice, and the way that it all works is pretty seamless. But it's crazy that they took this system where they had 400 billion stars and they're like, how can we make this bigger? Let's let people land on the planets.
And you can just land and drive around, which is super cool.
Yeah, you get, like, there was, of course, they added the, I forget what it's called, I think it's called a scarab or something, but they basically added, like, a dune buggy. So you can get out of the ship and then just drive along the surface and mine shit if you want to. Mining's quite popular.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool experience. I mean, you approaching the planet and landing is not a super easy task, but it's not one that you're going to struggle at. But it's one that's not super easy, which is kind of nice because it adds a little bit of challenge to the simulation and the landing experience. And then you get down on the planet and you drive around, and, you know, you say the mining is pretty nice way of just chilling and making a bit more cash. So, they also added ship customization, so you can customize your ship with skins and number plates and a looting and crafting system where you can pick up debris from destroyed ships to build new parts for your own. They also introduced engineers, specialist individuals who can upgrade your ship beyond its usual limits. So if you complete missions for them, then it will give you new ways of expanding the horizons of your ship.
Actually pretty nice, because they also have, like, their own special spaceports. So, like, I found one, and I went to their, like, planet, and as I was, like, approaching the planet, they started talking to me through the headset. And they, like, guide you in, and, like, it's like a completely different model. Like, most of the space stations look identical, but this planet one was very different to all the rest. It was, like, all black and, like, had, like, these obsidian towers and stuff. It was really cool. And then even the bit where your ship lands and goes inside to get to, like, the systems where you can, like, buy and trade stuff was all completely different internally. It's really nice, and it's quite a cool UI for how you get your ship upgraded from them, because you give them some stuff and then it, like, says, okay, what do you want me to upgrade? And it's like, okay, I'll make my thrusters better, and then it, like, gives you, like, a random percentage chance as to how much better they're going to be. But then you can also get a penalty as well, like, it might fuck something up, like make it drain twice as much power or something stupid. So it's pretty cool how it all works. It's
fairly kind of semi-standard MMO mechanics, which they brought in, which is interesting. A lot of MMOs will extend the gameplay like this, but it works pretty well in Elite. So, they also added fighter drones, which you can launch from your ship, and passenger lounges, so you can transport people around. There's also a whole bunch of new story and even more things in the galaxy. So some new starports and some planetary ruins to find, which is cool. More content's always cool. More unique content, I guess. It's not like it needs more generic content. There's also a Hollow Me avatar system which they added, which was pretty cool, because you get to... this was so much more detailed than I thought it was going to be. They're like, you can make an avatar of yourself. And I was like, I mean, looking at yourself is not really the focus of a space flight game. So there's going to be six heads and six bodies. But actually, it was incredibly detailed, the amount of customization you could do on your avatar. And it was pretty cool when we did the thing where you both sit in the same cockpit and you can look at each other.
Yeah, I literally looked to my right in my ship where there's been an empty seat for months. And then I looked over and not only was my little bubble head, which was part of the customization I added, but then you were just sat there and I was like, hey, it's my fool. He sat there. It's pretty awesome. And like when you were flying, like I could see the stuff moving on the pad while you were flying stuff around. Because it's like actually mapping your joystick controls one-to-one with it, the same as it does for you. If like if you look down while you're flying, you can see that your thrusters matching your actual speed and stuff as you change it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty nice.
No, it's cool. And I have my VR headset on when we're doing the multi-crew stuff, so I could look a bit to the left and see you. If I looked too much, the menu popped up, but it was still pretty cool. But yeah, and then the last thing they added was the Thargoids, which if you follow any gaming press, you've probably seen a few pictures of these badass aliens that have been discovered throughout the universe. And it was only this week, right, that a clan has actually managed to defeat one of the Thargoid ships in a huge...
25 minutes. So,
yeah. But that's pretty cool. Yeah. And then to combat that, they've also added some new weapons to help you have some sort of chance if there's enough of you against the Thargoid ships. But that's pretty cool. A nice almost endgame addition there if you're still playing Elite after 100 hours, I guess, and you've got some friends in the game. You can join in and have a go at the Thargoids.
Yeah, so I'll just talk about some of the multiplayer-specific stuff. So there are two things. There's Wings and there's Multicrew. And Multicrew was one of the things that was added in this Horizons Pass. But Wings were introduced to the base game in version 1.2, I think. They don't require the Horizons expansion. And realistically, it's sort of like a party system where the members of the Wing can speak to each other if using audio within the game, although when we played it, we always just used Skype externally. And you can see each other on the map. That's pretty much it. It is literally just, you know, it just shows you're in a group. It's very easy to invite players to a Wing. You can just select them from the game's communication panel, where online players on your platform will be shown, but equally strangers in the same system. So you can invite just a random to your Wing if you want. And then you just choose that option, at which point they can accept, and then they become a member. And once they've accepted, you can see what each Wing member is currently targeting, which is kind of useful because if you're all attacking someone, I can see if other people are targeting the same person or if they're targeting someone else completely. I'd be like, no, no, not that guy, the other guy.
Which especially is when you're like, shoot this guy, and I'm like, who? Oh, yeah. I got targeted. Who? Oh, I think that one. Oh, shit, not that one.
You can also see detailed information about their ship, including direct markers for their wakes, so you can see where they've jumped in and out of hyperdrive. Now, I feel bad sort of criticizing this because there is a huge part to this which I hadn't clocked onto and only discovered when I was doing a bit of research prior to recording this, which is there is a thing called a wingman navlock, which basically slaves your FTL drive to another wingman so that you'll follow them through hyperspace jumps and supercruise, subject to your usual restraints like disarming hardpoints, landing gear, etc. So that's how, when you see people in hyperspace and they're like literally in a nice Wing, you see like five people in an arrow shape flying through gracefully. I'm like, how the fuck have they done that? How are they matching their speed? Why have they done it? We can't do that. We're like at separate bloody ends of a planet. And it's basically you can slave them together.
That's cool. That's cool.
Which is good. But it wouldn't have worked terribly well for us because if they have a better ship and they can jump further than you, then you won't be taking long for the ride because your ship physically can't do the jump. So
you'd have to lock onto me because my ship's inferior.
Yes, I guess that would be the way of doing it. Yeah, I'd not even considered that. But yes, that would work. you can basically lock your ships together. So that's pretty cool. The main reason for doing this whole Wing thing is that you get a partial share of the bounty. You don't get a partial share of a bounty when destroying an enemy ship, but you get the full value of the bounty as of version 2.3. So when you destroy ships, you basically get given a bounty voucher, which you cash in, and it basically says, I destroyed this ship, give me some money. It's kind of like a wanted bonus in like the Wild West era, if you like. And if you're playing normally and there's like three or four people all shooting at a ship, then you generally get a little bit each, depending on who's done the damage. Whereas in this, if there's five of you in a wing and you all contribute in some way to destroying the ship, you all get the bounty each in full. So that works out really well, and it makes it an incredibly lucrative way of earning money, as even if you've got a really shit ship, you can make a lot of money with another yeah. member of the wing doing the majority of the work. And I actually experienced this firsthand, because when I was trying to do one of these community goals, I went to a place where I knew there'd be a load of ships, basically around like a mining colony. And that's where everyone was going, because it was the nearest one to the place where you had to drop off the bounty vouchers. And some random invited me to his wing and was like, oh, you're trying to mine for credits? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, oh, yeah, cool. You hang around with us, we'll do it. And like, whenever anyone would come in, they'd be like, oh, let Ben get the first shot so that he's definitely got a hit in before we destroy it. And I ended up making something like 3 million credits in around 45 minutes, which is a huge amount for me. And then a third of 14 million thanks to it being counted towards a community goal, which put me in the top 50% of all players.
Nice.
So that's pretty cool. Awesome. But realistically, there isn't any real teamwork to it. I mean, you are just ships that are occupying the same space and can see each other a bit better than you can in normal play. So it's good, but it's not what I would call true multiplayer. It's just makes it easier for you to be at the same place at the same time.
Yeah.
We did it only for like a little bit. I think we tried it one evening for a couple of hours, two or three. And it did go terribly well because we didn't know about the nav lock. It might work better now, especially if we had similar ships as well and we wanted to do the same sort of things. But yeah, pretty cool. Anyway, tell us about multi-crew, because multi-crew is really what is supposed to be the true co-op version of this game.
Yeah, we bought the Horizons Pass, which is required to unlock the multi-crew edition. It came with version 2.3, I believe. And this is the co-op mode where you can assume one of three specialized roles when you're on the same ship. So you typically had the big ship, so you would invite me to partake on your flying experience. Mm-hmm. And this is where your hollow avatar kicks in. Because your main character actually stays wherever he is, and then your hologram jumps to the other player's ship, which is a kind of a cool way of getting around it. We don't have to fly to the same system or anything like that, because that could be incredibly tedious if we're a long way apart. Mm. Although I guess it's maybe a little bit disingenuous, because one of the roles is always the pilot, which goes to the ship owner, and then the other two are basically fighters either in an external ship or on the ship itself, but limited to the subset of the weapons. So there's also an engineer position, right?
No, there's not. I thought there was, but I was getting confused. The engineers are the ones, are the people that you meet
who
upgrade
yes,
your engines yeah. and shit. I assumed in multi-crew that one of you would be like a science officer or something, where they would be able to do something more, you know, planetary. But literally, if you invite anyone to your ship, they are going to shoot shit. That's pretty much all they can do.
Yeah. So one's either going to basically be on the turrets in the ship, and the main pilot can assign certain guns to the secondary pilot, or you can control fighters that are docked and then, what's the word? Let loose. There's a better word for it. But
launched.
Launched. That's exactly what I was
deployed.
Looking. Deployed or launched. Both very good words. Let loose. Less good. Yes, but yeah, like you say, you're basically fighting support. And the turret stuff was pretty cool. You get a much better responsiveness in the combat, because it's a turreted weapon, so you can move around the ship easily. But it isn't... It's hard to say it's a true... it is a co-op experience, but it's a bit limiting.
Yeah.
But on the plus side, it is very simple to join. So you can search for ships that are open to multi-crew, or open your own ship up to the multi-crew experience, and then it's super quick and easy to just find the pilot based on whether you're looking for a smuggler, a bounty hunter, or a trader, or you can invite your friends through Steam and presumably Xbox Live, etc. So that was super easy. I mean, we were up and running with this in a few seconds, once we figured it out a little bit offline
with
nervousness about having to be in the same place.
But it's nice that,
wasn't true.
Nice that you can open it up just to randoms, though. So you can literally say, I am a smuggling ship and I'm open for people to join. And then people can ask to join, and then you can say yes or no, and you can kick them if you don't want them on your ship anymore, which is pretty cool. But it's also kind of stupid, because I don't understand why you would want anyone on your ship if you're a smuggler or a trader. Because if you've got a smuggling ship, you want it to be fast, which means you don't generally have weapons, because the whole point of smuggling is you get away fast. So you're not going to have someone there to need to shoot. And if they are, 99% of the time, they're going to be doing fuck all. They're just sat there. Bounty hunting, that makes sense, because you're going off specifically shooting people up. So, yeah, of course you want more guns on hand. Trading, again, there's not much point. It's very odd. I mean, I tried to join other people's ships, and I opened up my ship for a while. No one joined me, and I couldn't find anyone. So it doesn't look like anyone's really using this outside of, you know, their own little parties, their own little groups. It doesn't seem to have taken off in a big way as being a thing that people just do with random people. It's a shame.
But yeah, I guess with your friends it makes a lot of sense, because you can chat over Skype and have a bit of a laugh while you're doing it. But with randoms, you're just hampering what you can do, really. You're taking away some of the control you have. So, but yeah, so just to be a bit more clear, so the gunner has a full 360-degree view outside the ship. So while this does mean they only get access to effectively turreted or missile-based weaponry, they do get this nice 360-degree field of view, so you can just swing the camera around and take pot shots at enemies nice and quick. Which is kind of cool. And obviously it makes sense, because if you could only fire the front-facing weapons, then you basically just have to have one button on your controller.
So, I was very disappointed that when you were wielding my gunning thing and flying around shooting people, you never shouted, "I got one! I got one!" So I could say, "Don't get cocky, kid!" Of course, that might be because you didn't shoot anything. I don't know.
We had some issues with the button mappings on my Thrustmaster, didn't we? I was in VR as well, which made it kind of hilariously awkward, because I couldn't see anything.
VR's probably not the best thing for a 360-degree camera view outside of the ship while I'm doing evasive manoeuvres at speed.
But while it flashes up on the screen, like, push button 12 on your massive flight stick controller, and my VR headset's in the way in between me and the control stick, so I have no idea which button 12 is. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna warrant scan this guy, kill warrant scan this guy, and then push the button, and the 6 missiles go launching out. It's like, whoops. Your bounty has gone up. Whoops. So yeah, we had some button issues early on.
Yeah.
But that's, I guess, part and parcel. I mean, it was a factor of the fact that we played it a bunch, didn't play it for a year. You played it a bit. Hey, try this out with me. And I still haven't played it for a year, so I didn't really remember the controls or anything. So
yeah,
partly my own fault. I should have put an hour in before we played together. But, I mean, like we mentioned earlier, it's pretty cool to see each other's holo-me. You can see their avatar sitting at their desk. But maybe there's not a huge amount to do unless you're going to be doing bounty hunting. So,
yeah, especially if you're not the helm, like if you're not the person flying the ship, there's nothing for you to do because they do everything. One of the cool things about it is, which was a genuinely nice little thing about it, is that for every extra crew member you get one extra pip of power for your ship. So usually you have 4 pips of power that you divide between engines, shields, and weaponry. And if you have someone else on your crew, they get a single piece of power that they can assign, so they have something to do. So if I was like, we really need to get out of here, you could assign that piece of power to the engine so that we had, you know, 25% more power than we did when you weren't there. And then we could accelerate out of there faster, or we could put it all in the weapons and have much more powerful weapons than we would have. So if you had a full complement of crew, which I think you can have 4 people, then that works pretty nicely, because you actually get an upgraded ship from it as well, because you're just pumping more power in. I suppose it should also be pointed out that multi-crew only works with certain ships. It has to be a ship that's big enough that has an extra seat in the cockpit. And if you want to have more than 2 people, then you're going to have to buy a fighter bay and have 2 fighter ships, because that's what's used. So there's literally someone sits in the cockpit next to you and does the gunner role. And then you've got 2 more people who are going to fly the fighters either remotely from inside or actually inside of them. So there are very specific limitations on what ships can be used, just to add to the confusion about it. So anyway, let's move on to our likes and dislikes and such. I'll start off with an obvious one, which is that it is a huge game. Not just content, but also in terms of the galaxy scale, which is absolutely mental. It is, it's an incredible thing to fly around it and think there are, you know, 400 billion systems in this game. And yeah, a lot of it's, you know, it has the same problem as, what's that shitty game? No Man's Sky. In that it's, you know, you get to a point where it's like, okay, well, I've seen a gas giant, I've seen that type of planet. They all look the same after a while. And most of them are just rocky things, because that's probably what most planets are actually like. They're a bit
dull. Yeah, yeah.
Imagine if every planet was a moon, like our moon. That's pretty much what it's like, really. Oh, it's got a slightly different texture. So it's not terribly exciting, but there is still something awe-inspiring about it when you start slowing down and you see these huge stars popping up. And sometimes you'll see really interesting stuff that's out there. And with all the story, the power play, the commanders, the engineers, the continuous update cycle, it's, you know, there's so much there to explore that if you've got the time and the inclination, it's a really, really interesting game.
Yeah. So my first like is the kind of overall physics and the feeling of the flight. I think they've really hit the nail on the head. It's got a very cinematic feeling to the flight modes. So there's a really nice mix between it being fun but realistic. So at its core, I guess it's kind of a Newtonian system. But there's a whole bunch of restrictions on top to stop it from being a true Newtonian system, such as there's a max speed so that you can't keep just accelerating and accelerating up. And ultimately, the rotation rates are restricted, so you can't end up in a spin that makes you want to vomit in VR. Well, probably still can, but you know, one that will actually force you to vomit. But it feels really nice, and you can fly with your flight assist off, and you get, it's a fairly complicated but optional way of flying, and it's really nice because you get a pretty realistic Newtonian feel to the whole flight. Then you can turn flight assist on if you want a more fly-by-wire kind of dogfighting experience, and that's where it gets more cinematic. And then when you do need to get the larger distance jumps, you have to go through a pretty cool process of kind of docking your weapons, making sure your landing gear's in and everything's all in the right setup so you can enable your frame shift drive. And as long as you're not mass locked by being too close to a large body, then your ship will wind up into hyperspace. And that's a pretty cool experience, especially at the other end when you're like, right, that's where I'm going. There's the moon. Bring it into my reticle. And obviously, I need to get it to be, I think it's like 7 or 11 seconds away. I forget what the magic number is.
Six seconds is the precise bit you want to be at. cut your throttle to 50% when you're at 6 seconds. And then once your little thing gets into the blue bit, you pump it right back up to 100%. And then when you're 1 mm away, you flip that switch and drop it out.
But that feeling is great. And I love the fact it's measured in time, you know, like light seconds. So because you're going so fast, then you have to bring your ship to a standstill over a long distance. So it feels pretty, it feels pretty realistic, you know, like I'm not saying it is super realistic, but it feels realistic enough that it feels cool without being a ball ache. So I think they've got the line just right on that.
The thing I really like about it is that the feel of it is right. Like people say, like about first person shooters, like some games, like a gun feels much more realistic than others, like the rumble and the sound of it, like the heft of it. And in this, they've really got the heft of a spaceship right, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So like things like when you're maneuvering round, there's like a sweet spot which is shown on your throttle, which is like a little blue bit, and if you put the speed in that blue bit, then you're much more maneuverable and you can like just do like 180s much quicker and stuff like that. But one of my favorite, I've got two favorite bits. One is when you're docking, it's, you just feel not badass, but you kind of feel like, if you drive currently a car, you'll have had this feeling when you've gone into a multi-story car park and then you just do the perfect park, or you just do a parallel park and it's spot on first time, and you just get out of the car and you look at it and you're just like, yeah. And you'll turn to your partner and you'll say, look at that parking, and they'll go, what? And they don't give a shit. But you feel really proud of it. That's how I feel in this game when I land a spaceship correctly. Like you just sort of like gradually get to that 6 second mark, pop out of hyperspace, then you flip over and press the button to request docking, and they say, yep, go to dock 2, and it's like, yeah. And then you fly around, slow down, stick the landing gear out, graceful descent, beep, 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 touchdown. It's wonderful. It's such a great feeling. But the other thing is the planetary landing. When you come near the planet, you drop out of hyperspace like you usually do, and then it does planetary assist, and then you start. You basically have to keep it between like a little line as you descend closer and closer to the planet and cut your speed down. And then you start the orbital glide, which is when all the power cuts and everything goes quiet and it's just you in space, and you can just... The ship kind of feels like it's lurching. The closest thing I can place it as is the Star Wars ride at Disney World. There's a bit in that where you pop out of hyperdrive and then it just sort of goes weightless as the ship tips forward and it's silent, and you sort of hang there a little bit and you can just feel the weight come off you. And then the engines rumble up behind you again as you come out of it. And it does the same in this. And even to the extent that the ship is like shaking as it comes in, as it's going through the gravity of the planet you're coming to. And you can hear the ship creaking and rattling as you would expect it to. It's such a small thing, but that rattle is what gets me every time. You can also hear it if you just press the boost button, which like pumps up your engines and you just boost for like double speed for about 5 seconds. You hear it then as well, this little rattle, like the windows sound like they're going to fall out, like you're in a knackered Land Rover or something.
That epic. Boost is definitely not Newtonian. a boost, but now it's run out and my spaceship is slowing down again. I like to write it off as a you have a flight computer, which is ensuring that you don't do anything crazy or get too far.
Yeah, I think that's the right way to interpret it. In any case, sorry, I went on a bit of a ramble there. I'll be very brief with my like, which is this is a great game to play during conference calls, which I have seriously done on many an occasion. Because if you're just sat on a phone call with a client and they don't need you because they're talking to everyone else, you just sit and play this for an hour and then just chime in every so often. Because it doesn't require your full attention. So most of the time, I have my iPad propped up on my desk, and I, like, when I've been playing it lately for about 20 hours, I've watched the first 3 seasons of King of the Hill just sat on my iPad while I've been playing, and it's been great. You can just do a podcast, really good. I tried a while ago, like a lot of meditation apps, because everyone's like, oh, meditation's so much better for you. And I tried like all that Headspace shit and all these things, and it's like, relax your mind, let go, think of nothing. So it was fucking difficult. You keep talking in my ear, shut up. Imagine I feel, oh, for God's sake. And I can't do... I hate those things. I just cannot relax doing them. With Elite Dangerous, I can literally just sit and just zone out and think of nothing and just watch the world go by. It's very much like you said, like a truck simulator, Euro Truck Simulator type of game where you can just... It sounds like it should be boring as shit, but it's actually just very, very zen, as you put it. So I highly recommend it for that.
Nice. My last like is the VR experience. So initially when it came out, I had a couple of issues with the Vive. But more recently when we played it, it seems to be a better experience. I don't know if it's because I'm just more used to VR now or whether there have actually been improvements. I know I read online that there have been. But with VR and stuff, it's always a little bit hard to remember back what it was like. But I remember being a little bit blurry and hard to read. And it's still that a little bit to some degree because I'm playing it on the HTC Vive. And I think maybe this game is slightly better to provide, like, supported on the Rift. But the experience is still exceptionally good. So the overall feel of being in space, you look around the cockpit, and they've got so many things spot on in this regard. So when you push the joystick forward on your Thrustmaster, you see the guy's hand move forward because obviously it knows where you are, right? So it's kind of surreal to see the hand moving in the game. And equally with the stick on the left, that will move too. With your hand in real time, and then you can look around the cockpit, and they've got both the feeling of being in space is really good in the VR because you can look around space, and that's where it really shines. Some of the text can be a little bit tough to read because when you're looking at screens full of trade options and there's a lot of text, and you have to be looking in the middle of your Vive's viewport really to get the full resolution, and the things on the edge are a bit more blurry, which you don't notice so much when you're looking out at space, but you definitely notice it with the text. And you have to move your head around a lot to track the text you want to read. But it is now definitely readable, and we've played it, and I've had a pretty good experience. And I think some people get on with the text in VR a lot better than me, but I still enjoyed it. And they've got the controls down pretty good as well when you've got VR. So you can look off to the left and the menu pops up. And you can control it all with just a couple of buttons on the flight stick, like certain ones move between tabs, and then a little hat joystick I've got on top of my marine joystick, which lets you move around the menus. But it was pretty intuitive to get around the menus, and it worked well with VR. And it is nice just to turn your head to the left or right and get the information immediately. That's a pretty cool experience. Like, look to the right. Huh, this is my weapon loadout. Nice. Look down. Huh, that's where all my friends are. It's like, yeah, it's pretty
The nice thing is with that it's also a parity with the normal mode, because I use that, but I obviously don't have this system. But I use the hat, so I press E, and then I can use the hat to look left and right. And when I look to the left with it, the camera pans round just as it would if I had the head tracking. But when I look to the left, then the menu pops up. So it works in the same way, but it's just obviously much more intuitive and easier. I wonder, does it have the eye tracking system in this
one? It does as well.
I know you've got an eye tracker, but I don't know if you've tried it with this.
I do have the Tobii eye tracker on my monitor at the moment, and but I haven't tried it with this, because when I've played this more recently, I've tried it in VR. So I think it has the kind of thing where I think it's got the eye tracking where you look at the edge of the screen and it tracks your view. So if you look at the edge of the screen, it will start turning the camera a little bit. But obviously, the eye tracker I've got, at least, not compatible with VR, because it needs to see my eyes.
And they are lovely eyes.
Oh, thank you, Benjamin. but I think this will be super, super, super exciting when VR headsets get just a little bit higher resolution. I don't think it needs to be massive. And I am pretty tempted to back the Pimax. They call it the 8K headset.
Only needs to be slightly better, and now he's going to talk about the 8K headset.
Only needs to be slightly better, but when have I ever bought just what I need? But yeah, so the Pimax 8K, which is actually 2x4K screens. But if I'm tempted to back that and Kickstarter, if I trust the quality enough, because I think this game and that headset will be a perfect match. So
yeah, I've been very, very tempted, especially as I don't have a headset yet. Anyway, moving on to the dislikes. I'll be very brief with this. It is a massively complicated game, very steep learning curve. I watched probably a couple hours of YouTube videos to understand how things work when there's something that I specifically wanted to do. So recently I decided I wanted to play as a smuggler, and I wanted to know how to do smuggling. How do you find smuggling routes? How does it all work? How do you do this stuff? And I found like a half hour video on how to do all that kind of shit, and then I went in and played it. And just learned huge amounts of stuff that you didn't even know were there. Because it's that's fundamentally how they expect you to learn this stuff, really. Even their own tutorials are just videos on YouTube. So a good example, I've played this, I think, for close to 100 hours. The other day, I found out that there's a thing called a fuel scoop, which lets you go to most stars, and as you go around them, you can scoop the solar flares, and that will power your ship. So then you can basically explore the star systems for as long as you want. You don't need to stop and buy fuel like some kind of mug, which is what I've been doing. It basically turns your ship into a Tesla with a massive battery. So
nice. That is pretty cool.
So that's good. But yeah, you need to watch a lot of videos to really get into it, I think. I think you need to play it and be like, is this for me? Do I like it? I do like it. Now I'm going to watch a shit ton of YouTube videos, and now I'll go back to it.
Yeah, agreed. My first dislike is just that the multiplayer, I mean, we are reviewing it from a multiplayer and co-op perspective, and it is a little bit lacking. I would not maybe even go as far to say a little bit shit. In terms of multiplayer and co-op support, not the game itself, but, you know, the multi-crew setup, I think it was a valiant effort to make it a more fun co-op game, but ultimately watching you fly around and then just shooting some guns when we're in combat wasn't the most thrilling experience of my life. And then when we do play separately, your ship can just pop around the galaxy a lot faster than mine, because you've played it a lot more. So, I'm not sure if it's something which I would jump into as a massively multiplayer. Oh, yeah, let's play this again, Ben. Let's rush to play it for the next 10 hours, because it's tough to stick together and do things together. And sometimes it's like, there's a fight. Oh, it's over. I haven't even got there yet.
I think we could probably alleviate that now that we know that how this Navlock shit works.
Yeah, that's true.
And if you've got... Because you only need a few credits to get a ship similar to mine, really, because I'm on a probably like a second level ship, Whereas there are massive ones coming later where you can do all kinds of shit. And I could get a really big ship, but it'd still be slow because it could be hauling a shit ton of cargo or something. But
yeah, I
was particularly disappointed with the multi-crew, and I think I'd got confused. I think I'd had some sort of opium dream where I was thinking of FTL, Faster Than Light, the wonderful pixel arty game, which is fantastic if you like space. And I'd sort of imagined it more like that. Or maybe I was thinking of like that Star Trek bridge VR thing. I was thinking, great, one of you's going to fly, one of you's going to be an engineer and do like navigation stuff, one of you's going to be in charge of this, one of you's going to do the fighting, someone's going to do, you know, some kind of engineering to make things work better. Like they might have like little puzzles or shit that they have to solve in order to get the thrusters working more powerfully. And it's like, no, you've just got extra people to shoot guns. And it's like, ugh. It's like they even went to the effort of being like, oh, you could pick and choose a ship to join, smuggler or bounty hunter. Yeah. It's like, what, the fucking smuggler needs three gunners. Yeah, you're there whistling through with your big shipment of slave cargo and you've got three like hired guns sat on the back of it, making it look even more dodgy. So yeah, it's massively disappointed in that myself.
Yeah. And my last dislike, and this is both in the multiplayer and the game in general, really. But while there is a ton of stuff to do, I never really found much of it that meaningful. I mean, it's a lot of randomly generated quests. Move this item to there, destroy this ship, do that thing. And while it keeps you busy, i.e. if you want to sort of grind for the money, it's good. But, you know, you're basically doing random quests to get loot to upgrade your ship to do slightly harder random quests, which you're now well equipped to do, so it's not harder. It's kind of like, it feels a little bit like an open world game, like Assassin's Creed or something, where there isn't really a main quest to go through. And I think for some people that's fine, because if you want the kind of Euro Truck Simulator feeling in space, it's excellent. But for me, I never really felt, I was hoping to get a lot more. Okay, there's kind of a main quest line that is fairly in your face, which you can work through and get to know a lot more about the Elite universe, maybe find out a bit more about the powers at play and how, you know, how the technology came about or this, that, the other. But it feels like a well-populated world, but not necessarily a hugely, it's hard to get to the character of the world.
I think that is something that is there, but you have to look for it. Again, it sort of goes back to my whole thing of you need to watch a shit ton of videos to find that stuff. And like, I only just joined the Power Play stuff in the last hour or so of gameplay. And now I'm part of a faction, and now I've got like a whole thing, and there's groups of people that we go off and have to do like kind of like clan stuff, where you have to go off and defend various planets, and you can see like this big galaxy map where you can see our influence spreading out against other people's, kind of a bit like Stellaris in that sense, where you sort of have these like vacuous maps where you're pushing against other people. And that's kind of breathed a bit more life into it for me, because now I feel like I'm actually doing something. It's like with those community goals, I felt like I was doing something because I really wanted to get into that top percentage of players. But I completely know what you mean. And from a multiplayer point of view, that's even worse, because you're literally, I mean, you might not be in the same system. I'm not a system. You might not be in the same faction. Very awkward. Just got a few comments briefly before we finish up. One, which I always feel we should mention in a multiplayer game, server connections, which were all incredibly good, never really had any problems. Occasionally, you get a little bit of lag when jumping out of hyperdrive, especially when there are community goals and there are a lot of people. So recently, there was one at the Shire Starport. I forget what it was called. Shire. I think it actually was called Shire. I know we've been listening to that Shia LaBeouf song, but I think it was called the Shire Port or something. But whenever I jump out there, it would take like 30 seconds. Usually it's instant, but it would take like 30 seconds or so, because there's like 50 other ships that are all actually there, all real people. So it's very much that NMO kind of thing. But most of the time it's fine.
Nice. So just a comment, really, because I'm not really sure what was going on, but we played the multi-crew that time for an hour or so, and we're going to hunt this guy down, going to get this community goal. You start shooting at him. I start shooting at him, and he goes, fine, 200 credits for shooting the wrong person. I'm like, what the fuck?
That was weird.
You've got a bounty on him. I guess I didn't, because I wasn't far enough to get that community quest. I'm not really sure what's happening. Maybe if I got to the community quest section and unlocked enough of the game, maybe it wouldn't have been a problem. And maybe it was a one-off, maybe something strange happened, maybe it's something they fixed. I don't know. But it was pretty weird when I shot the guy that you were trying to shoot, and it was like, right, you're fined 200 and you're in trouble. And you're like, oh, I just got 20,000 credits for killing it. And I'm like, huh, I got a fine of 200.
Nice. Yeah, it was a bit weird. I mean, it is worth pointing out that you can play in a local mode with no other real world players, or you can play an open play in which you're on a server with loads of other people. So some people prefer playing locally because then they aren't going to get blown up by a random for no reason. I've never had that happen, really. I think I've always been blown up by NPCs. You can choose to play it that way. That probably alleviates some of the hyperdrive lag issues that I experienced and may have solved our problem of bounty hunting not working quite as we'd expected due to all the different factions and different people.
Can you play local co-op? Like, it's called local, but could we play offline, quote-unquote, together?
Yes. Oh, well, okay. So, do you mean could we play as we are now, like me in Sweden? You in Sweden and me here, and play in our own private mode?
Yeah, together? Precisely.
Yes, you could do that, yes.
Cool, nice.
But you can't play the two people on one machine.
Yeah. No. Sorry, they call it local mode, but I was trying to use the... Yeah. Yeah, we could play together privately. That's all I wanted to know.
Absolutely. Cool. And we did. We did when we were in a win.
Oh, yeah, of course we did. The very first time we played. Yeah. You're right. My last comment is just there's an awful lot of buttons and probably too many for my Thrustmaster, which has 15 buttons on it and a hat or something. So there were times when I'm like, oh, now I need to reach for the keyboard, which is fine unless you've got a headset on. So that made it a bit tough. But I think with the right configuration, you'll probably get there eventually.
Cool. So in conclusion, we always like to ask, would we play it again and would we recommend it? John, would you play it again?
I will definitely play it again solo. I want to explore it a bit more, try out with a headset again and get into it. Will we play it again together? Potentially, but I'm not super excited to rush back to it and play it.
No.
As a co-op experience, I probably wouldn't recommend it. Like maybe I'd put sort of buy it on sale, quote unquote, because it is an excellent experience. But I think it wouldn't have legs for a long-term co-op experience unless you're going to get super into it and just be in a wing and play it all the time together. So I think it would be an on-sale recommendation just from a co-op perspective. But if you like Flight Sims and Space, then buy it for yourself and play the co-op a bit on the side.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think if you played it on your own for a bit and you got into it a bit more, then I would definitely play it again with you, because I think... if we went off and did like some of the faction missions and stuff, it'd be kind of good. But I think it's more one of those games where you just want to sit and drink and chat, like how people used to have phone calls back in the day. We don't do that anymore. Play something while you're chatting. And sometimes Rocket League, we need to concentrate. And so we can't really chat as much. Because we're like, oh shit, that goal. Whereas with this, you don't have that. Because you don't really need to concentrate. You just fly around. But... I would certainly recommend it as a meditation aid. That would be my recommendation. But yeah, nice. Exactly what you say about Carl. So in closing, thank you very much for listening. You can find more of our lovely episodes on our website at connectingtohost.co.uk. I think recently, what did we do last?
Star Wars episode?
Star Wars Battlefront 2 is a recent...
No, it's not even out yet.
Oh, Jesus. Sorry, Star Wars Battlefront 1 we reviewed recently. And what did we have before that? I should really have looked. Can't remember. So many games we played.
Yeah, we did Titanfall 3 or 4 ago.
That
wasn't on before it.
I forget. But there are good games there. Good games, evidently, that we've reviewed that you should go and check out, because I don't remember what they were, but they're great. Not the Doom episode. Don't listen to that unless you want to be disappointed. If you want to suggest some games for us to play, then go to Twitter and you can find us at CTHcast. And occasionally we give away games there as well, so that's well worth checking out every so often. Follow us there. And if you have time and the inclination and you're going to say something nice, then please do leave a review on iTunes. But until next time, thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time for some more Connecting to Host.